This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
So this will be the last chapter in Fiqh Financial Transactions. It's Babu Atiyat al-Marid. It is the chapter on gifts from the terminally ill. And Imam ibn Qudamah rahimahullah in his book Al-Umda says here, Babu Atiyat al-Marid, Tabarru'at al-Maridi marad al-maut al-makhuf wa man huwa fil khawfi kal-marid kal-marid كالواقف بين الصفين عند التحام القتال ومن قدم ليقتل وراكب البحر على هيجانه ومن وقع الطاعون ببلده إذا اتصل بهم الموت حكمها حكم وصيته في ستة أحكام. He says there is a ruling on donations from someone during the illness from which he or she is expected to die. The same rulings apply to or applies to, the same ruling applies to others with similar fears, like one standing between the two ranks before battle, or en route to being executed, or in a storm at sea, or in a land infested by plague. Given that death actually follows, the ruling is that such a donation is to be treated as a wasiyya, a bequest, in six respects. So it will not be like a bequest in all respects. It will be treated like a bequest in six respects and unlike a bequest in four respects that we will come to. What are we trying to say here? We're trying to say that when you are... when you are not sick, let's first define what sickness are they talking about here. They're talking about makhuf, that sort of like a perilous condition, like certainly life-threatening. Life-threatening may be the best translation for this. So life-threatening and terminal and followed in reality by death. Because if it was not followed by death, then we will go back retrospectively and say that your gifts during that period were all valid and binding and will not be treated like gifts of the terminally ill. They'll be treated like gifts of anyone. As a sort of a normal person who's not terminally ill, if you decided to give a major gift, like a huge gift, to your neighbor, can someone, contest to that? No. But if you are terminally ill, or if you are in one of these perilous situations that Imam ibn Qudamah likened to terminal illness, if you are terminally ill or in one of these situations that Imam ibn Qudamah likened to terminal illness, will you be able to do that? No, you're not. Will you be able to give a gift to anyone? Yes, you will be able to give a gift, but that gift will not be treated like any other gift that you would have given, during your sort of healthy life. It's not going to be treated like this. Why? Because تعلق حقوق الورثة بالمال. Because during your terminal illness, the heirs, the inheritors, they have rights now attached to this wealth. And that's, part of the difference between Islam is pretty liberal, by the way. But there are certainly differences between Islam and liberal thought. It is liberal in the sense that it does respect to a great extent individuality. It respects to individual freedom. It respects choice and so on. But there are certain limitations, and we have to be observant of those limitations. You did not just fall off of a tree. You came from a lineage, and you have your own lineage. You have so there are rights, on you, And there are entitlements, and there are obligations on you, rights for others that are related to you, whether you they are your ancestors or your descendants. And we have to be observant of this. So someone who's terminally ill may decide to act against the interest of their waratha, of their inheritors. And if they did, then we will have to put brakes on that. We will tell them that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had allowed you 1/3 of your wealth to do whatever you want with it after your death. So even, you know, even after your death, you could say, when I die, this goes to, you know, Fulan or so-and-so, and that goes to so-and-so. And, you know, so you could distribute up to 1/3 of your estate among people other than your inheritors. But Islam will not allow you, even though Islam does respect freedom of choice and individuality, you know, personal freedoms and all of that stuff, Islam does not allow you to have kids and to have, like, brothers and sisters and to have both parents and then bequeath all of your estate to your cat. It's just not going to happen. You know, it will tell you, no, that is not happening. So the idea here is that balance between your personal freedom and also the rights of your kin and the society. So that gift of the terminally ill, they will treat it like a bequest. They'll say, okay, you're terminally ill now. You're going to die tomorrow or after tomorrow. It's fine, you could give gifts. But that gift has to come out from that 1/3. And if it did not come out from the 1/3, no. Your inheritors are entitled to 2/3 of your estate. We will not recognize, we will not validate that gift if it is more than 1/3 of your estate. So let's go over the technicalities here.
Can you give it to inheritor?
You cannot give the 1/3 to an inheritor unless it is permitted by the other inheritors. As a gift, yes, then it will have to be, because it's treated like a bequest in this case. If you're terminally ill, it is treated like a bequest. And if it is treated like a bequest, you cannot bequeath to an inheritor unless that would be validated by the other inheritors. Okay. So where is the gift of the terminally ill like? Where is it like a bequest? The first of the six similarities between gifts of the terminally ill and bequests. أَحَدُهَا أَنَّهَا لَا تَجُوزُ لِأَجْنَبِيٍّ بِزِيَادَةٍ عَلَى الثُّلُثِ وَلَا لِوَارِثٍ بِشَيْءٍ إِلَّا بِإِجَازَةِ الْوَارَثَةِ لِمَا رُوِيَ أَنَّ رَجُلًا أَعْتَقَ سِتَّةَ مَمْلُوكِينَ عِنْدَ مَوْتِهِ لَمْ يَكُنْ لَهُ مَالٌ غَيْرُهُمْ فدعا بهم النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم فجزأهم أثلاثا فأعتق اثنين وأرق أربعة. First, it is permissible, it is impermissible for an ajnabi, non-relative, to be gifted more than 1/3, or for a warith, a family member receiving a fixed share of inheritance, to be gifted anything in addition to his or her inheritance without the permission of the other heirs. This is based on the report of a man who freed 6 slaves as he was dying, and he possessed no wealth other than them. The Prophet ﷺ summoned them and divided them into 3 groups. Then he freed 2 and returned 4 to enslavement, or kept 4 in enslavement. So here they're saying that the first similarity between gifts of the terminally ill and the first similarity between gifts of the terminally ill and bequests is that you cannot bequeath more than 1/3 of your inheritance to anyone except with the permission of the inheritors. you cannot bequeath any part of your inheritance to one of the inheritors because they already have a designated share, you know, except by the permission of the other inheritors, because they have the right. They can permit you to do that. But without their permission, you cannot. You cannot bequeath more than one third to anyone. You cannot bequeath anything to an inheritor in addition to their inheritance. You cannot give them any more than what Allah designated for them. In both cases, the exception is to be permitted by the inheritors. And if you're permitted by the inheritors, you may do that. But they may recant it at the time of your death. So that's why, like I said in the previous session, if you want to ensure that you have like a disabled child or a child with certain limitations and you want to give them something more, then your only way would be to retain some property in trust for them or make a waqf. Okay. And so he said that this is based on the hadith where the Prophet, where a man had six slaves and he freed them all before his death and did not leave anything. Well, at the time, you know, you should read my appendix on slavery and so on. There is no religion that is more sort of emphatic about the emancipation and the virtue of emancipation and the urging emancipation than Islam. But during that time, they were the property, and someone who had six slaves and freed them all did not have the capacity to do that, does not have the legal capacity to do that. So the Prophet ﷺ freed two out of the six because that would be one third, because he has the legal capacity now if he's terminally ill. Now, if he was not terminally ill and he did it, good for him. You know, no one will have any sort of caps on this. But if he, now that he's terminally ill, he does not have the capacity to dispose of more than one third of his estate. Does not have that capacity. Then the Sheikh said, "Athani, the second similarity between gifts of the terminally ill and bequests. Athani, أن الحرية تجمع في بعض العبيد بالقرعة إذا لم يفي الثلث بالجميع للخبر." This applies to slaves in particular. When slaves are the property being freed, freedom is granted to some slaves and not others on the basis of qura'ah, casting lots. When one third of the dying person's estate is not sufficient to account for them all, as explained in the aforementioned report. Certainly, if someone had six slaves and the six slaves, he has other properties, the six slaves came out from the one third, all of them would be freed. All of them would be freed, because all of them are less than one third of his estate. All of them would be freed. But if some of them have to be freed, which ones do we choose? Casting lots. Because that is the fairest. Sometimes it looks like a little bit, you know, too just like, but that would be the fairest. You're removing favoritism completely by casting lots. Because it is, you know, yeah. That is the only way that you completely remove favoritism. It doesn't have to be flipping the coin. Casting lots is not flipping the coin. But flipping the coin is a form of casting lots. It's the same principle, you know. So flipping the coin is also a valid way. Then the third similarity between gifts of the terminally ill and bequests, أنه إذا أعتق عبدا غير معين أو معينا فأشكل أخرج بالقرعة. If an indeterminate slave is to be freed, or if one was specified but there is confusion as to which one the slave actually freed is selected via qura or casting lots. The fourth similarity between gifts of the terminally ill and bequests, أنه يعتبر خروجها من الثلث حال الموت فلو أعتق عبدا لا مال له سوى أو تبرع به ثم ملك عند الموت ضعف قيمته تبين أنه عتق كله حين اعتاقه وكان ما كسبه بعد ذلك له، وإن صار عليه دين يستغرقه لم يعتق منه شيء ولم يصح تبرعه به، ولو وصى بشيء فلم يأخذه الموصى له زمانا قوم عليه وقت الموت لا وقت الأخذ. Okay. So الرابع أنه يعتبر خروجها من الثلث حال الموت. The fourth, a gift of, from a person facing death must come out of the one-third of the dying person's entire wealth upon his or her death. The deceased may have freed or donated a slave and previously owned nothing else besides him. If the deceased later acquired wealth equivalent to double the slave's value and died possessing that, then the slave's manumission would be considered retrospectively effective from the time the slave was freed. This is because the slave's value ended up being equivalent to one-third of the deceased's wealth, since what was earned afterwards was also part of that wealth. Okay, you're getting confused? You shouldn't. Because it's, you know, he's saying that we are saying that whatever property you will give as a gift when you're terminally ill will be treated like a bequest, in the sense that it should be less than within, should be within one third of your estate. When do we make that determination? At the time of death, not at the time of gifting the property. So let us say at the time let's use a factory here because it's more relevant to us. So you have a factory, and so 2 months before your death, so let's say in April, you gave that factory as a gift to someone. In June, you died. Between April and June,
We are planning to get that thing ready.
So you have in April you donated this factory, you gave it away as a gift. June, the person died. In April, that factory was less than one. In April, that factory, let's say that the factory was for 200, and all you owned at the time was $300. $300 is your entire estate, and the factory was 200, and you gave it away to someone in April. But between April and June, you earned 300 more. So your estate became, when you died, 600, and the factory, 200. So does this person get the factory now? The entire factory? Yes. Because it didn't matter that the factory was more than one-third at the time of the gift. What matters is that it was within the one-third at the time of death. And now that you got the person got the factory, what about the profit that was made? What about whatever the profit made between April and June? Who gets the profit? The recipient of the gift, because we would know retrospectively that the gift was valid. And that is one of the dissimilarities between gift and bequest. It is effective immediately. Once it is validated after death, we will consider it effective retrospectively. Another way, whatever profit was made by that gift, yield, sort of any profit that accrued, it will belong to the recipient, not the donor. Okay. But then he said, on the other hand, if the deceased had incurred a debt equal to or greater than the value of the slave, then the slave would not be considered to be freed or donated at all. Also, if something is bequeathed to a person, but that person delays taking it, the bequest is calculated in relation to the deceased's wealth as of the time of death, not the time when it is eventually taken. Okay, so that factory was $200, and at the time he gave you the gift, the person had 600. The estate, the total estate was 600. He lost 200, and then his estate became 400. At the time of death, his estate depreciated, became 400, and the factory is still 200. Does the recipient get the factory? No. What does the recipient get? 400 divided by 3 is what? 133 and third. That is what he gets out of the factory. So he will get a portion of the factory. The portion of the factory that he will get is what? 133 and third over 200. That is the portion. So he will get about over 200. Because the factory, the factory is $200. So he will get 60% of the factory. He'll get about 60 some percent of the factory. 60% of profit, right? The profit we will have to, in this case, to figure out, it would be a very difficult arithmetic problem. But we will have to figure it out. Because we will have to calculate the profit, because the profit will be added to the general estate. And then the prophet will have to be, is the recipient, but his share of the prophet will depend on his share at the time he received his share in the factory. But it will be like arithmetically complicated, but you get the concept anyway. Then, in this case, he had the factory. In this case, the value of his estate depreciated. The factory that was within the one-third at the time of gifting is not at the time of death, but what matters is what happens at the time of death. The other scenario that he mentioned here is when the qabd, the possession, is delayed. So you have been given that factory. At the time of death, let us say at the time of death, the factory was 200 and the estate was 600. But you did not get the factory until 2 months later. And at that time, the factory was 300 and the estate was 600. When we consider the time of possession or the time of death, So basically just remember, what is considered is the time of death in terms of the factory coming out, or in terms of the gift coming out from the one-third. Al-Khamis, the fifth similarity between the gifts of the terminally ill and bequests. أَنَّ كَوْنَهُ وَارِثًا يُعْتَبَرُ حَالَةَ الْمَوْتِ فِيهِمَا فَلَوْ أَعْطَ أَخَاهُ أَوْ وَصَّ لَهُ وَلَا وَلَدَ لَهُ فَوُلِدَ لَهُ ابْنٌ صَحَّتْ العطية والوصية ولو كان له ابن فمات بطلتا. Whether the fifth similarity, whether or not the one receiving a gift from a dying person is considered to be an heir is determined concerning both of them at the time of the death of the donor. If the one facing death had no sons and made a bequest or promised something to his or her brother, but then had a son, then the bequest or promise would be valid. However, if the son died before the deceased parent, then the bequest or the gift would become invalid. The time of death is what matters. The time of death is what matters. Now, you did not have kids, and you had a brother. You had a brother. And you gave a bequest of something to your brother. Okay? You gave a bequest to your brother, something in bequest to your brother. You did not have kids. Your brother, if you did not have kids, would be one of the heirs or not? Yes, would be one of the heirs. Okay. So if your brother, as one of the heirs, you need not to have a father also, but for your brother to be one of the heirs. But let's say you don't have a father. You don't have a father, you don't have a son. So if your brother, as one of the heirs, you give a bequest to your brother. You give a bequest to your brother. Is this bequest valid? No. But can we validate it? Depends on the time of death. Depends on the time of death. Let us say you had a little son between that time and the time of death. You gave your brother the gift in May, and even though you're terminally ill, you had a son before you died in June. Before you died in June. Will your brother be deserving of the bequest? Yes. Even though at the time you made the bequest, he was not deserving. He cannot get the bequest because he's one of the inheritors. But since at the time of death he was not one of the inheritors, we figure that retrospectively he is deserving of the bequest. Now, flip this. You give your brother a bequest when you had a son. You had a son. You gave your brother a bequest. Unfortunately, the son died here. Before death. Your brother became what? An inheritor. Does he get the bequest? No, he does not. Because what matters is the time of death. At the time you made the bequest for him, it was a valid one because he had a son and he was not an inheritor. But at the time of death, he was actually an inheritor because the son died.
السادس أنه لا يعتبر رد الورثة وإجازتهم إلا بعد الموت فيهما. The approval or disapproval of the heirs is only given consideration after the actual death takes place.
So, like I said to you before, when I explained that the waqf issue, you know, you have one of your kids, you sit all of your kids down and you tell them your brother has this sort of mental issue or has this limitation, has this disease, and I want to give your brother a little bit more, you know. And all the kids are so nice and accommodating and stuff, and they say, absolutely, you know, we would have actually given him out of our own pockets, and, you know, and then you die, and they take it back. Can they take it back? Yes, they can take it back. Because it makes sense. Because maybe you pushed them into, you forced them. Maybe they were not willingly approving of that extra that you had given to their sibling. And being the father or being the parent, you had your own ways of just like forcing things down their throat. So they recanted. Will they be able to recant? Yes, they will be able to recant. The only way that you could actually guarantee that you could leave something is to make a waqf. Trust for that particular child. So does this apply? So the time when the heirs,
When are we talking about this? We're talking about a bequest or a gift of the terminally ill that is more than one third. And now the heirs will have the right to say yes or no. Or we're talking about a bequest or a gift of the terminally ill to one of the inheritors. And now the rest of the inheritors have the right to say yes or no. In these cases, if they said yes, they can take it back at the time of death. So what matters is the time of death. Their approval or disapproval is, you know, considered at the time of death, because now they are their free will. وتفارق الوصية العطية في أحكام الأربعة. Gifts from someone facing death differ from bequests وصية with respect to four rulings. We said that there are many similarities between the gift of the terminally ill and the wasiyya, because we are not considering this to be a wasiyya of a healthy gift of a healthy person that will be effective immediately. Complete transfer, binding, complete transfer of ownership will happen immediately, and that's it, done. Now we're saying that since the person is terminally ill, there are rights attached to the estate now, that's the rights of the inheritors, or to at least two-thirds of the estate now. But there are still differences between saying to someone when you're terminally ill, there are differences between I give you this as a gift, and he accepts it, or she accepts it, and bequeathing it to them. There are differences. The obvious difference is when you bequeath something to them, they are not entitled to it until you die, clearly. They are not entitled to any profit until you die, clearly. Because this is a gift that is contingent upon your death only, the bequest. But gift of the terminally ill is different. So here are the four differences between the gifts of the terminally ill and the bequests. أحدها أن العطية تنفذ من حينها فلو أعتق عبدا أو أعطاه إنسانا صار المعتق حرا وملكه المعطى وكسبه له ولو وصى به أو دبره لم يعتق ولم يملكه الموصى له إلا بعد الموت وما كسب أو حدث فيه من نماء منفصل فهو للورثة. A gift is effective immediately. Were someone to free a slave or donate him or her to a person, the freed slave would be emancipated at once, and the donated slave would belong to the recipient with the slave's earnings belonging to the new master. But if the person bequeaths a slave in his or her wasiyya to a person, the slave is neither freed nor owned by the recipient until after the person's death. As for what the slave earns up until the person's death, or any other growth of the gifted property that can be separated from the principal gift, this belongs to the heirs. Is it clear? That's what we said. So, you know, the factory and the profit of the factory. We said that you gave the factory away in April, and then you died in June. Not you particularly, like we're talking about. So someone gave a gift and then like the factory away in April, they died in June. If this factory was a bequest, the profit of the factory belongs to whom? The heirs, their inheritors, not the bequeathed, not the person who was given the factory in bequest, the legatee, in a sense, the recipient of the bequest. But if this was a gift, another wasiyya, the profit of the factory goes to whom? The recipient, the legatee. That's clear. Good. الثاني أن العطية يعتبر قبولها وردها حين وجودها كعطية الصحيح والوصية لا يعتبر قبولها ولا ردها إلا بعد الموصي. The acceptance or rejection. The second dissimilarity between the gift. Dissimilarity between the gift and the wasiyya. The acceptance or rejection of a gift is taken into legal consideration at the time of the offer. Just like the gift of a healthy person. whereas the acceptance or rejection of a bequest is only taken into legal consideration upon the death of the legator. So we said that there has to be offering and acceptance. For the gift of the terminally ill, when is the acceptance considered? At the time of the gift itself. At the time of the offering. But if I bequeath something to you, and you accept it at the time of the bequest, then that is not legally considered until you accept it at the time of my death. Because that is when transfer of ownership happens. Keep in mind, in the gift of the terminally ill, transfer of ownership is happening at the time of the gift. It is just pending, coming out of the third at the time of your death, so that we can go back and say retrospectively it was in fact effective. But the transfer of ownership did actually happen at the time of the gift and was, and then all of the rulings now will basically follow. Profit will be yours and so on at the time of the gift. Where it's only pending, coming out of the one-third at the time of your death, so that we can go and retrospectively say, yes, that was a valid gift. And all, you know, and it belongs to the recipient, and all the profit belongs to the recipient. The third dissimilarity between the gift of the terminally ill and the bequest, the third dissimilarity, annaha, the gift of the terminally ill, تقع لازمة لا يملك المعطي الرجوع فيها والوصية له الرجوع فيها متى شاء. A gift is binding immediately, and the gift giver does not have the right to recant it, whereas a bequest can be recanted whenever the legator wishes. So, I give you the factory as a gift offering, you accept acceptance, and you possess, you know, you take the key. So you have that's possession in terms of the factory. In terms of like food, you take the food. You actually take it, move it, hold it. But if it is a factory, you take the key. That's possession. You know, I have now access to the factory. Can I take the factory back? No. Are you guaranteed that you'll have the factory? No. But you're guaranteed that I cannot take it back. You're guaranteed that if that factory, when I die, comes out of the one-third of my estate, it is yours retrospectively and all the profit is yours. I cannot take it back from you. But if I bequeath the factory, if I give you the factory as a bequest, and before I die, I change my will. I change all of my bequests, everything. Can I do that? Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Transfer of ownership did not happen. Therefore, I can re-change all of my wasayyah. Okay. الرابع, the fourth dissimilarity between gift of the terminally ill and wasayyah, أنه يبدأ بالأول فالأول منها إذا ضاق الثلث عن جميعها والوصية يسوى بين الأول والآخر منه ويدخل النقص على واحد بقدر وصيته سواء كان فيها عتق أو لم يكن وكذلك الحكم في العطايا إذا وقعت دفعة واحدة. The fourth dissimilarity and the last. Gifts are distributed according to the order in which they were designated. In cases where the one-third of the dying person's wealth does not suffice for all the recipients, and conversely, in the wasiyah, bequests are portioned equally among all recipients, and any deficit is shouldered by them all in proportion to their share of the bequest. Regardless of whether the manumission of a slave was involved or not, it is the same with gifts when they are allotted all at once. Okay, the last difference or the similarity between the gift of the terminally ill and the bequest, the last dissimilarity is that when it comes to bequests, let us say I gave you, you know, let us say I gave 200 to X, 200 to Y, 200 to X and 200 to Y. As gifts, and then when I died, I only had 600. When I died, I only had 600. I gave 200 to X and 200 to Y when I was terminally ill, and then I died, and my estate was only 600. So what happens now? When did I give the 200 to X? If I give the 200 to X first, and then 200 to Y, second, then what comes out of the 600? 200 only. They will all go to X. Because the transfer of ownership, like I said, happens at the time of the gift. Whereas if I bequeath the 200 to X and 200 to Y, bequeath 200 to X and 200 to Y, and I only had 600, what happens? X will get 100 and Y will get 100. Let us say I gave 200 to X and 200 to Y as a gift, but in one statement, I'm giving each one of you $200. Then it will be 100 and 100. No, not para. It will be 100 and 100. Because it came out, you know, in one statement. So, but if I, let's say I had, when I died, I had 900, not 600. Then up to 300 can be given in bequests. And if it is 200 and 200, in the first example where X got the 200 first, X will get 200. And Y will get what? The 100 that's left. Yeah. You understand it all. That's excellent. That's it. Alhamdulillah. Rabbil Alameen. We are actually done with the fiqh of financial transactions. That's big. That's a major accomplishment. Alhamdulillah. Next is the fiqh of inheritance. Then the fiqh of family. Then the fiqh of foods and oaths and jihad and judiciary, and then you'll be done, inshallah. We'll take 5 minutes for people to leave.